And now, so I was given these questions, and we'll discuss it, and it's open. I mean, the point is not for me to read the questions and to just add to a drasha. If the Olam would, we can talk and back and forth if you like. The first question is, the Rambam, according to the common understanding, believes there is a correlation between the level of tzidkus one has and the level of hashgacha receives. With this in mind, how and in what way are the tefillos of the Hamayin Am effective? Does their level of tzidkus inhibit their tefillos from being accepted in any way? So, I think I'd like to broaden this point a little bit. Somebody who speaks about this is the Akeda in Arichus in the following way. The Chazanish used to be very annoyed with Arshanim, who took a Chazal and built an entire Shita on a Chazal. He said, just like in Halacha, you have to go through an entire Sugya, in Agada it's the same. So for instance, if someone says like if somebody is Koyas, he's like being Oyver Avodah Zarah. You can't build on that alone. There are many Chazal that Kas, and you need to get the sense of it from all the Chazal. The Akeda speaks about, Chazal speak about Mazel. Chazal speak about Ashkocha. Chazal speak about Tzchusim. Chazal speak about Tefillah. Now, let's take a parallel. Somebody gets sick. There was a bacteria that attacked him. There was a lowered level of bodies. There is a genetic condition that predisposes him. There's an environment that's very unhygienic. All of these are factors. When a person is studying biology in broad strokes, you can never take one factor. Okay, you're sick, you must have not been hygienic. That's not the way to go with it. You learn all the factors that go into disease, and then you work your way backwards and say, well, in this case, this person was exposed to a normal level of bacteria, but there's something about his immune system that's been compromised, that's not good. Or this person has some genetic disposition because of this reason, and so on. So in Ruchnius, it's very much the same. It's a balance. A person who is a tremendous tzaddik, and like the Rambam says, two conditions. He has to be an extraordinary tzaddik and be dovek nakadosh baruch hu at the time it's happening. If a person at that level, he needs not do anything more. But everyone else, tefillah is an element that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to help us in its time of tzara. Mazel goes into a play of which things will affect the person. So all of these things are really components. You can't just take one thing and say, if X, then Y. That's the wrong way to say this Chazal. It is one of many items that go into it. I'll say over my Rabbi Yochai Shalevitz used to have, he would have sometimes very picturesque ways of portraying something. He explained why the Torah doesn't, why we don't have a continuous learning from Nisim about what we're supposed to do. And he said, he would say it in a very funny way. Rabbi Chaim was very ponderous, and when I knew him already, there was a lot of years ago, he was older, and he would say things very ponderously, but they were very funny. He'd say, we have a story to describe this. It is the story of, I don't know how to translate it right, the deceptive mother-in-law, or something along those lines. She said that there was the Baruch Tam and his wife had two running arguments. One was the doctor had ordered for him, because of his heart condition, to drink a glass of hot milk every morning, and he refused to eat or drink anything before davening, no matter what. So Chaim said, who was right? She was right, of course. This was pikuach nefesh, or certainly a big tzar, and he should have checked it. The second argument they had was, he very much wanted Reb Chaim Sanza, the Devar Chaim, as a son-in-law. He eventually did become a son-in-law by him. Chaim was a goyin ador, a tzaddik ador. He limped on a foot. So the Baruch Tam wanted it, and his wife did not. Who was right? So Reb Chaim said, he was right. I mean, you talk about the Devar Chaim, this was the giant of the generation, and the Mela.
One day she was bringing milk to him in the morning to try to get him to drink. She slipped, she fell and broke her foot. So she said, my husband is right. He shouldn't be drinking any milk before that. So Reb Chaim said, in order to learn the lesson, you need to have chachmah. In other words, it's the same way like when you see a disease. What the disease is, you can identify. What's the cause of it? If a person comes in with an erratic set of symptoms to the hospital, if it fits a neat case, then a computer spits out the answer. But if it's strange, you have to start thinking the combination of things that could be happening into causes. So I would stay away. Tefillah is something that helps. Tefillah is something that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants from us. How Kadosh Baruch Hu works, all these factors, all these different schusim, that's Kadosh Baruch Hu's. We learn these things so that we know where we need to put more emphasis. We do more mitzvahs to get more schusim. We do tefillah, hisayrus, whatever it is. But tachlis, there's not any one factor that you can just straight, write out A causes B and nothing else and only A. Okay, that's how you think. Any questions? Any follow-up? Anybody? Okay. Most, if not all, yeshivas dedicate an incredibly portion of the day to learn Gemara Be'ir. How does this make us into better Ovdei Hashem? Or in other words, is the point of Limud Gemara being to make us Ovdei Hashem? And if so, how does it do that? So, I would point out a few things. The Maral says that, first of all the mitzvahs, learning is the most ruchnistic activity. It requires, and that's why it's so hard. You sit down to learn, you fret, your fingers don't know where to go, your mind is busy with pictures. It's very hard because a genuine sichliestika enterprise is far from gashmis as we can get. So the activity of learning itself stresses the most ruchnistic part of a person that we put a finger on. The neshama is something so beyond, so to speak. Second, if we're learning with a modicum of lishma, then what we're learning is, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu think the right thing to do in this case is? If you see the Rambam, who is considered to be very cerebral and rationalist, every so often Pesach Mishnah is Om HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tziv HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Om HaBore. He is constantly sort of alluding, it all starts with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzin. Me and him are having an argument on a few $1,000. The question is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a guideline to what's mine and what's his. I need to figure it out, because if it's wrong, I'm stealing. So even though we're not conscious of that while we're learning, but in the big, big picture, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to understand what's right and what's wrong. That's the second point. I want to add a third point. The Rambam, when he speaks of Avas Hashem, says two criteria for what's called Avas Hashem. One is the learning and the enjoyment of the learning, tainug the learning. That's in Sefer Mitzvah, how he describes it. Then he adds on, that is the derech of the ohev, to want to spread the ava. Now let's think a little bit and understand how that is. Being close to somebody could mean physically close. I'm sitting right next to him, and I enjoy his company, means I'd like to hang out with him. That is not shayach with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Obviously, there's no physical contact, closeness. It's a meaningless statement. Some shittas are to remember the nice things HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us. It's a harder shita, because at the end of the day, there could be a fireman that saved you with tremendous bravery, and you owe him a debt of gratitude, and you do anything for him, you still don't consider yourself close to him. You don't say his best friend. You might say he did the most for you, but you don't consider it real closeness. Real closeness is kirvas hadas. The Gemara uses that expression a little bit in Ksubis. The Gemara is a shayla. What they said is Ksubis totally in B or kirvas hadas. Chupa is enough, but kirvas hadas means when I feel that our understandings, our evaluations, our take on things are the same.
when people are dating and they get married, inevitably, like, there's a turning point where you say, you know, we understand each other in a way that I never ever was understood. I never ever understood someone like that. No one ever understood me like that. There's always that type of moment, because real kirva is where my take on things and that person's take on things click, they resonate. They're on the same wavelength. That's the only type of kirva we can have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Torah is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's take on right and wrong, on good and bad. And it's a struggle for us as we learn the halachas, as we understand it, as we get into it, as we're osek in it, we resonate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's moral evaluations of Toiv and Ra. And that's real kirva HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I mentioned 3 points here. One is a personal exercise that it's the most ruchnistic activity we can do. It has no physical objects to it. It's all thinking, and that's why it's so difficult. But getting over that hump, working your way towards there, makes you more ruchnius. We spoke about the sense of wanting to do ratzon Hashem when a person is osek in halacha and trying to determine what is wanted from me. And then we spoke about another nekuda, about the resonance of my understanding of right and wrong, and Kaviyachal, the Ribbono Hashem, the understanding that he's put in this world and said, this is my take on the world. When a person's mind and instincts resonate with it, he's close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is how I would define it. Okay, any... Good. Three. Do you show me the... I must be getting right. Do you show me the pick... Do I get a prize every Ryan for being right on all the answers? Is anything? Three, Yisham certain amarom is difficult to kavanas while davening. The statement of Chazal is quite discouraging. Is there anything we can do personally to enhance our kavan in davening, or our davening more generally? It's interesting that this is an issue that spans across every type of yeshiva. It's something that almost every place I've been to, it's something that people struggle with. I find it interesting. Reb Chaim Stein, the Talzer Yeshiva, used to say in his yeshiva, in Europe, life was so rough and so difficult that it took anything to set you off sobbing. People, there were always gzeiros hanging over people. Money was in terrible short supply, and it wasn't just a question of money for some extra trip. People didn't have meals; they had to skip meals occasionally. You know, people had clothing was threadbare, and everything was a hassle. People sat around long and not married. Everything, people had a lot of stress, and it took almost nothing. A Yom Kippur, an Elul, a Shavim Tap. Something happened, and everybody, it would just pour out, was ready to pour out. Today, Baruch Hashem, we have relatively, I know everybody thinks they're overstressed, especially in the yeshiva as demanding as over here, I'm sure everybody feels very, very stressed. But we don't have that type of existential threat and stress that we had. So I think HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us now to start reaching into a deeper recess of ourselves and trying to bring out emotion from a deeper place. I think that's an interesting amount of door. I don't know how many people here enjoy reading something like poetry. It's something like beautiful writing that's, you know, I don't know how many people really enjoy reading anymore. I'm not even sure of that. But the deeper regesh is when a person focuses himself and tries to think about things and is moved by words that express deeper feelings, deeper thoughts. How many people have ever found it meaningful to sit alone somewhere with a Tanakh, taking prakim that are especially moving, and saying them quietly to themselves and living through it? It's an experience that once you experience emotions that are hidden in words, and especially Tefillah, Tehillah, they're made to express emotion rather than information. And it used to be where we were just waiting to explode into emotion. Baruch Hashem, we don't have those hardships, but now we have a challenge of doing it. It takes a person to be misboded a little bit, and I'll add the thing at the close of the media and everything else you have in your pocket, so that you are misboded actually, and resist the temptation to take a selfie or anything else, and sit between yourself and your Ribono Shel Olam, and learn or read something that you felt after Torah that you felt moved you especially. And I want to tell you a personal experience, an epiphany I had a few years ago. I was being mavis said for something that I had done dozens of times. And I came across an apostle by Yosef and his brothers, and he said, you know, don't worry, ki lemichya shlachani elokim. And I, for some reason, it triggered in me a picture. And I sit back and I say to myself, let me put myself in Yosef's shoes. My brothers take me when I'm 17 years old, and they sell me to become a slave to pick cotton for the rest of my life in Louisiana. I will work like a dog till the day I die. I will never get married. I'll never have children. I'll never make a nickel, never accomplish anything. I will be a workhorse for the rest of my life. Hard to imagine a greater jail sentence than that. And 22 years I've been there, and nobody even bothered to look up at, to look out for me, to send somebody to say, hey, whatever happened to him? Okay, we got over our anger, it's behind us, where is he? 22 years, as far as they're concerned, I'm picking cotton and being beaten by a slave master in Louisiana. Hot cotton, picking cotton under 100 degrees sun, and that's it. That's where I am. And they're here in front of me. And for the first time, they actually are frightened out of their wits. And they realize what they've done. And I tell them, it was Ashkacha. And the Torah doesn't quote people who give lip service. The Torah quotes people that are saying what they mean and mean what they say. And he says, believe me, that was Ashkacha, so that the whole family gets saved. I remember I was just so stunned, I couldn't move. But because for whatever reason, I had actually bothered to pay attention to the words and to the scene that was in front of me. And we need to consciously go and focus on these things. There's in Yom Kippur davening, there's a after the avoda is very poignant and very moving. After the avoda, there's about 10-20 little slichas and so sorts. This was when the Bismillah was there. We used to bring these korbanos. Now we have terrible things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help us. Things be good. And then we get on to Asarah Gemalchus. And most of the time you think that the pipe and put it in there so that we have a break between the Avoda and the Asarah Gemalchus to catch our breath. Somebody 2 years ago, Hillel Pillay, everybody knows who that is, I'm sure, he came out with a Niggun on the Sein Achris Lamecha, and it just blew me away. I mean, those words came alive. They walked off the Machsa and you know, they shook me. It's simple, I'm sure you've heard it, and it's become very popular. And I said to myself, look at this. I was treading on a gold mine all these years, and I never sat down and brought it out. I would say to take a niggun that you feel evokes feelings in tefillah, and sit again, say quiet with yourself, and say a psukim of Tanakh with a niggun. Say Kedusha to yourself, obviously the way you're allowed to say it without, you know, shame and so on. Once you get into the habit that those words trip emotion you, and you say it slowly and focus on it, you don't have to put kavanas in, but once you sensitize yourself, the words should sing in you. And hopefully, if you need to put effort, you need to devote some focus on it. But if you do it, then Be'ez Hashem, I believe you can at least begin to get a sense of what could be Kavanah Tefillah. For a large percentage of Talmidim Yeshiva this year will soon move on to some form of university college environment. What preparations can we do now while in Yeshiva to help us cope with the ensuing problems of the future?
I can't resist saying I just published a book on it, and for a special discount for Gush Talmidim, you can order it online and get it. I actually, I don't know if the oil is familiar or not. I'll be honest, some of it I think will be relevant. Some of it, the book was written, it's called Orkos Chaim, a Betorah for Life. I don't know what to call it, Black Hat Yeshiva world, Haredi Yeshiva world, this actually is in many ways a sharp challenge. People sit many years of learning Kollel with perhaps the expectation they would remain in that environment in some sort of job capacity forever. Life moves on, and for whatever reason, they're going out, and it's happening in ever larger numbers because the numbers are growing, and that's the reality of it. And for somebody who is expected to be one world and finds himself in the other world, that crisis is a real crisis. It's a crisis of trying to reconcile different shittos and hashkafos. It's a crisis in an environment that you've come to regard as normal, as opposed to an environment that you feel is bad or subpar, and that's now your environment. And it has a lot of pieces to it that are difficult. It's got its own difficulties. And that's very different than somebody who spends a year or two, even three in yeshiva. It's very different in terms of just the amount of time you spent and what you're anticipating. Were you anticipating moving on or not? I think the most important thing, there's a mashal from the Breslava. It goes like this. There was a king who had a dream that he would become crazy, that the wheat would be poisoned that year and to become crazy. I read a historical footnote on it, that there used to be fungus infection on the rye, and it would cause hallucinations. So that year, everybody was in a happy hour all year long. It was like, a full year of happy hour. And the kid, so he calls in his yotzim, and he asks them, what shall I do? So the first thing he said, we'll have a special supply of wheat for you, and we are going to keep you sane. They came back to him a day or two later, and they said, no, that's not good advice, because a sane king cannot rule over an insane nation. That might explain the president we picked, but I'll put it. But he said, you can't have a say. So you're also going to have to eat the wheat and also suffer, become insane. But you'll have a ring around your finger that will say, remember, thou art insane. That's the story. I'd like to bring it relevant to here. The challenge of a community where people spend only a year or two in yeshiva, move on, and so on, is that this year or two and this environment becomes like a surreal environment. It's sort of, that's not real life. And therefore, it was nice to spend a year or two, but I will adjust to the cultural norms and values and everything else out there. I think it's important to remember that Emes and Tov and a world that looks like the world that be is here. A person should be, a human being should have spent all his life being Osik and Chachmas Elokim, and Malachim should have brought, wine and be Tzola Ofos. It's because we sinned, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, we must be part and parcel of the very physical world. But Ruchnius is a mainstay. And first of all, understanding that society around you takes a toll, understand that not being like society 100% is probably the most important thing. Havdalah is important. You make a cheshbon how much insane you have to be and how much sane. But you need to ask yourself, how much do I need to be like other people to function in whatever environment I am? And how much am I different? As a Jew, I'm different. I need to be marked as different in a positive way. And what they don't understand, they don't understand. But I need to understand. And I need to reconnect back again and again to a yeshiva or a very ruchnius environment for that reason. If it's the time that I'm going to a Beis Medrash to learn, it should have a Beis Medrash atmosphere to it. It should be closed. Closing cell phones
smartphones, whatever. It's not just they shouldn't disrupt. It's I'm not going that your Eimadol is Kaddishul. That world does not exist here. It exists there, and I'm coming here to recharge. In yeshivas, in many yeshivas, become very popular to Yachikala. And people have said, I've heard from many people who came, that they get a tremendous amount just slipping back into yeshiva mode. And what I spoke about, where I came beforehand. Understand that a yeshiva environment is the real environment. It's not like university is a preparation for life. So engineering school is a preparation for being an engineer, but that's it. This is very different. This is the makom. This is the makom unique. This is the kruvim. You need to go outside and do what you need to do, but there has to be a place and time and space to connect. Shabbos and Yom Tov. Those are points I make in the book. It's always being able and to gain that perspective. The level of Shmiras HaMitzvos in a yeshiva, the level of understanding halachas like a yeshiva, the level of people's kedusha and interaction like an yeshiva, that's the emes world. Everything else around is a compromise. It's what has to take place because the world is different and we need to be able to fend. But understanding that, to start understanding that now, and to always making sure that we touch base with a place that's really sane, to get that sense of what's emes and what's not is the most important thing you can do.
One more question here. There are many Tchumei Torah. Of them, Machshava takes up a major chelik. If one wanted to build up his own Machshava, what Sfarim would Rebbe recommend for him to read and in what sequence? So, I have two or three comments on this. First of all, the problem, I guess the challenge with Olam Machshava is it doesn't have a real inherent discipline the way Gemara has. Gemara is a logical yes, no. Does it make sense? Do I have a kasha from it? Do I have a raya to it? An argument in Gemara, in Halacha, has a certain rigorous discipline. So there are different approaches and different ways of understanding and some debate whether this svara holds or not. But it demands of you. The Gemara is constantly asking, how can you say this? It says differently. The Gemara doesn't say, well, I feel different about the issue. None of that exists in the Gemara. If there's a braisa that says not like you, it's back to the drawing board. Something's got to give. There's a certain rigor. And that's why when the scholar started, the Lei Behuda notably, he withdrew his askama for some, and he said he will only give askama a sperm in the Olam HaGadah to people who are also accomplished Talmidei Chachamim in the world of Halacha. Because then he feels these people are coming from a solid base. So first of all, it needs something. You need to say, you need to balance, achieve a balance between the part of Torah that demands accountability, and it's not what you would like to say, but what it says, and what can be proven, versus what can be disproven, and so on. So having a firm anchor is one. Two, you need to pick up a derech from somebody. It's hard for me to imagine any serious firm, not a Maral, not a Nefesh HaChayim, many more of those firm, not a Moron of Uchim, none of those firm, could a person conceivably just learn on his own? It's like Reb Chaim al Rambam. It's very hard to imagine somebody could pick it up on himself and just learn it from the words. So you want to hear from somebody who you feel is accomplished Talmud Chacham, and in this area also. Two, Rav Hutner writes in his introduction to his Sfarim that this chelik of Torah is where psak halacha and the actual kiyum mitzvah are sort of two separate things. I could decide the halacha like this and I could not do it. In the world of what we call machshava, the broad world of machshava, over there, your meisim and your shavas are very closely aligned. You have to feel that this person is solid. He's balanced. He has gravitas. He's a person that you look up to as a person. Then his insight and his thought carries that. If you have issues with the person's personality,
then somewhere along the line, his take on Torah, which is expressed in Machshava, are going to be problematic. I don't know this, whoever wrote the question, what level he's holding on. There are some Sfarim that I think are Shavuot Chol Nefesh. I found Or Gedal Yoel to be an amazingly good sefer. He takes Hasidic thoughts and translates into words that are easy to understand. The way Rav Dessler had done a generation before, those are type of Sfarim that they give you a segue into a different world. My Rebbe, the two people whom I heard was Rav Hutna. There's no tapes from Hutna in any language but Yiddish, and so I don't think it'd be helpful to anybody. Rav Moshe Shapiro, I believe some of his Thursday shiurim, I believe, are available. They're in Ivrit. They are classic in the ability to explain a deeper concept in words that are solid and seicheldik. He was a master at being able to throw ideas and break them into meaningful, logical pieces, bits and pieces. Those are things I could recommend. Other than that, it's a very tough answer because it depends where this person holds from, and finding somebody that you can relate to in terms of the person, the way he expresses it, the way he teaches it, and the person as a gavra are crucial for any real a deeper understanding of Torah. Okay, thank you very much. It's been very nice being here. It's always a pleasure. It's a tzibur that's interested and engaged and serious. Baruch Hashem, I see it from the boys of Soul Spring that go and come back. It's always a pleasure to see the transformation that happens. And Bez Hashem, Yishuvim Matzliach, and keep growing and steiging. And if you get engaged in the right way here, Bez Hashem should last with you a lifetime. Okay.